Hey, bud.
Hey Tony, I am
Hey,
so
how are
sorry,
you?
man. I'm doing
No,
great.
that's okay. I was just checking to see if I'd got it right because I was thinking it's at 3. That's it. And I thought, oh, he's not here. So I thought you might have had some issues or something. So I'm
No,
glad I checked.
it's 2 o'clock here, 2:20 here.
Oh, it's
So
2:20. Ah,
yeah, there's
okay.
5 hours between us, but this is just as good for me if it's
Are
good
you
with you.
sure?
Yeah,
Oh yeah.
no.
Good. Oh well, perfect, perfect. That's why I thought, oh, hang on, I kind of worked it out. It's like it's 3 is it for me because that's Eastern. But
Yeah.
I know the time differences work strange in the US because it's so big. So,
Yeah.
but if this is good, then this is good for me too.
Fantastic. Yeah, let's do it. That's great.
Yeah, baby.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. My other co-host is he's got family stuff today.
No
So
worries.
he's not able to make it, but I'm just really thrilled to talk with you.
Oh, this is awesome. Thank you so much for having me, man. Really, 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 thank you.
Oh, this is great. I've been so excited and looking forward to talking with you. Venom is one of those fucking legendary bands that is just amazing and has paved the way for so many bands afterwards. So this is thrilling. So thank you.
No, bless you. Thank you so much. It's humbling to hear that. But I think from all of the band, every member, from the originals to all of us, it's all one big family and means something.
Oh, great. Well, how much time do you have today? So before I don't want to take up all your
it's
day.
the it's all your ball. You dictate the game. So
Okay,
I'm
thank
here
you.
as long as you need me,
Oh,
brother.
you're
As
so
long as you
generous.
need me.
Great. Well, I tell you what, I'm gonna do. We have an amazing intro, and
Awesome.
then we'll get the ball rolling. How's that?
That sounds perfect to me.
Okay, cool.
Killer. Greetings! This is David DePay from Bergen's Jail, and you are listening to Heavy Metal Horror! Stay tuned for more metal and horror! Yow!
I am Montag, master of illusion. What goes up must come down, but not always. And you are watching and listening to Heavy Metal Horror. Oh, kiddies, Montag's flying solo today. Chop Top is off out in the wilds. Probably pulled his groin too much last night or something like that. But we are talking with Tony Dolan, the legend from the legendary Venom and now Venom Inc. Oh, look at that. Is that a
Yeah, baby.
candle?
No, it's actually a drink decanter, which somebody brilliantly gave us, awarded to us on in Cleveland at the last show we did in
Nice.
Cleveland. Yeah, no class, no class. So we're going back. That was very generous. We got some amazing gifts.
That is awesome. And I know
Yeah.
you'll be we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but you are coming back to Cleveland in January.
Oh yeah.
I'm
Oh yeah.
excited. Yeah, and I'll be there. I'm very excited
Oh,
to
brilliant. I can't wait. I can't
yeah.
wait.
I
You know,
was
it's a.
there last year when you were there
Oh.
with Nunslaughter and a couple other bands, and I'm like, oh, it's fucking Venom, it's awesome.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that it's what I love about the US is of course you can play Fillmores and theaters and we do all kinds of things, festival shows and stuff. But I for me it's about where we came from, and then all the bands playing in bars and clubs and pubs, and that's where you get the meat in there. When it's hot and it's sweaty and it's crazy and it's too full and no everybody spills their drinks, but everybody's in one
Yes,
zone. You can't beat that stuff. You can't beat that stuff.
that's awesome because I remember because No Class is a great venue because it's
Yeah.
tight, it's
Yeah.
tight, the great little venue no matter where you're at, whether you're
Yeah.
2 feet away or because it's only about 50 60 feet deep,
Yeah.
but they cram a lot of people and it's tight, man, but it's so good,
Yeah, the atmosphere is amazing. And then you get this electricity that's just a buzz, and it's okay. You can get bands going like, oh, they're playing House of Blues and all that's really great. It is fantastic and Fillmores and stuff. We did a run with Danzig. It was like the lowest house was like 5,000, it was like 7,000 people a night. Great atmosphere because he's a great performer and the band was amazing. And we had Power Trip on there, so it was ripping shreds. But the classic shows like the Marquee in London was freaking tiny. CBGB's was freaking tiny. You know, all that funky thing. L'Amour's was not a big club. You know, so Ruthin, you know, all those places that are iconic in our psyche were not big places. They were the underground. They were where we went to you know, when the mainstream didn't want this shit in clubs and didn't want these kids in there. That's where we went. So when you go back there and you play that, it kind of revitalizes you. It reminds you as an audience participant and us as band members that this is our bread and butter. This is where it all began. This is where we are. And we experience a bit of history, and that's wonderful.
Ah, that's so great to see to hear. One of well, your guitarist, Curran Murphy, he's a local
Oh, yeah.
guy. He's from
Yeah.
Akron,
Yes.
and he came on our show, you know, earlier, and we've maintained a friendship. You
Brilliant.
know, we went to see another friend's band, Vindicator, and he was there, and we were
Oh, yeah.
talking, you know, and then
Yeah.
we were talking stories about you, and he was telling me, you know, the crazy schedule, like when he got asked and
Oh,
got in there
yeah.
because the delay in the plane, and like there was no rehearsal, and he's like, oh fuck, how am I gonna do this, you know, and. But he said everywhere he went. Now this is everywhere he went. I forget where he was at one bar, and I don't know if it was like Suffocation or some other band was there. And like, hey, who are you playing with? He's like, oh, I'm playing with Venom Inc. They went, Tony. Oh my God! And I said everywhere that he went, everyone had great stories to tell about you. And he goes, that's when I knew that Tony was going to be an upstanding guy. He's not going to fuck me. He's going to be
No.
great to work with. And I thought, well, that what a testament to you
Yeah.
as a person, as a, you know, because there's so much room and you hear so many stories about egos. But one thing we have learned in this show, like especially dealing with underground metal, is like we've never had to deal with anyone with these fucking big egos, you know, like
No.
I'm too good for this. And it's just so nice and refreshing. I mean, I know those stories are out there, but we fortunately have not had to have that. So I just wanted to let you know that
Well,
he
that's
has
really nice.
nothing great. And he was telling me how crazy these venues from playing 50,000 people to the Poland show with 500,000
Yeah.
people. That's
Yeah.
insane.
I'm just today I'm going to be excuse me. Today I'm going to be uploading the whole show. Excuse me.
It's
The whole
okay.
show video that they sent me. So I'm going to be uploading it today. And when it kicks off, you kind of, because it was saying like there's 500,000 people, and we were like, okay. And when it kicks off, it's like, it doesn't look like there's not 500,000 people there. And by the time we finish, there's like 500,000 people there. We're like, what the fuck? But I mean, the amazing thing about Curran was, you know, we went out on tour. We did the first half of the tour, and then Mantis's partner got sick, and he couldn't leave her because they live in Portugal and she needed his support. So he said, listen, I can't do the second half of the tour. You know, maybe you can get somebody else to dip in. And so I thought, okay. So I was very fortunate. I contacted Mike Hickey, who was gone before the storm and with the Kronos band. I said, Mike, he lives in Boston. You don't fancy? And he was like, yeah, sure, why not? I knew he'd been taken for Joe Bonamassa as his guitar tech, but he was free. So he said, yeah. And you know, we had the blast because Mike is so easy and he's a consummate professional. He's an amazing guitarist. And we had a blast doing the second half of the tour. And then, you know, we were hoping that Jeff's partner would be better. And we had Indonesia. So we had the Hammerfest in Indonesia, Jakarta. So that's a big old festival out in Asia. And then it looked like Jeff couldn't go. So I was like, oh shit, oh shit, because we had it booked. So I gave Curran a call because I'd watched him in 72 Legions. Of course,
Yeah.
they toured with us with Ringworm and
Right, yeah.
on that tour that you saw
Another
the
great
scene.
Cleveland band, Ringworm, yeah.
Killer band. And I watched him and I just thought, yeah, that guy, not only is he a great player, and I knew he'd been with Annihilator, I knew he'd done Nevermore, so I knew he had some pedigree, but I watched him perform and I just thought, you know, if you let that guy rip and just give him the whole stage, there's something really special going on there. So I asked him if he wanted to do Hammersonic. Loaded him with like more songs than he'd ever had to learn in his life, and he did an amazing job. And yeah, we did it. And I thought, well, if we do that, maybe we can do South America with Possessed, which we had coming up, because I know Jeff doesn't like touring anymore so much, and he didn't want to go to South America. I was too far away if anything happened to his partner. So yeah, after we did Hammersonic, I said to Curran, do you fancy staying on and doing South America with us? And he was like, fuck yeah. And he blew it away. He was amazing. You know, between him and Jackson on drums, I was like, wow, this band's like, I've never seen it like this. You know, even I was overwhelmed. And I've been doing the Venom thing for 30 plus years. I've been doing the whole thing for 40 plus years. And for me to be overwhelmed, considering the caliber of musician I've, you know, watched, enjoyed, played with, been on stage with, you know, it's something. And the pair of them just made me, even I was shocked, you know. I was like, wow. And he hasn't stopped. You know, we did Rockstadt in Romania. We did Poland and Rock, of course, Motoculu in France. We have Mexico coming up, the MXN Fest in Mexico City. We have a big thing in Newcastle, back in Newcastle for Christmas, and Curran's rocking ready to go. And, you know, he just is a performer and one of the nicest guys you can ever meet, an
Super nice.
incredible musician. And it's like, I just feel so, so lucky, you know. And it's really nice to hear stories that people, you know, because as I get 10 people who love me and one person who thinks I should die of some kind of cancer. So, you know,
At
but
10
that's
to
how it
1, that's not
goes.
bad, you know?
Yeah, that's not bad, one out of 10. But, you know, that's how it goes. I've been having bricks thrown at me for 40 fucking years, so they just bounce off now anyway, you know?
I was in a band, the Escaped Fetal Pigs, back when I was in
Oh,
college. It was just
brilliant.
a sloppy
Brilliant.
rock and roll. I mean, we just did sloppy, goofy songs, you know,
Yeah.
Jimmy Jetson is a slut, things like that.
Oh,
You
fantastic.
know, yeah, silly stuff. Well, we were opening for a band called The Stain. They were a punk band, and they had a bunch of these like punks, like skinheads, that would follow them.
Okay.
And I remember playing. We were opening for them, and I remember playing. And here comes this bottle. I remember seeing this bottle coming at me in slow motion. I'm like,
Oh yeah.
okay, so visions of the Blues Brothers movie flashes to me, and I'm
No
like, fuck,
chicken neck, no
yeah,
chicken
no
wire
chicken
though.
wire to block it. I'm like, fuck, that's a bottle. So I moved, and it went by my head, and I thought, oh fuck, it's gonna hit our drummer, but he, you
That's
know, it
right.
didn't. And so then I got off the stage. I was playing guitar in this band, so I took my guitar off and I swung it, and I hit this guy. I just like
Yeah.
hit him right in the side. And then here come the bouncers, like run off, like right, you know, jumping over the bar. They like
Yeah.
started pummeling everybody, macing the guys. Everyone got
Fuck.
thrown out. And I'm like, fuck, this is a college bar. We're supposed to be having fun. And I'm like,
Yeah.
okay, we're all cool. So then got back up on the stage and we finished our set. But I'm like, that's just ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just one of those crazy stories. But
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the thing is, Mark, it's like, you know, when what I was doing about 2 seasons ago, I was just going on stage and said, there's one rule tonight, there's no fucking rules. Because the whole idea of punk rock, you know, but every generation, from Elvis to the Beatles to, you know, each explosion of culturally of music, and extreme music is no different to the punk thing. It's a generational thing where we want to scream, we want to have a voice, we want to be heard. We don't want to be listening to what all those old fuckers are trying to tell us it means. They don't know how we feel. Of course they do, because we were all the
Sure.
same. But
Right.
we don't think that way. So we want to make our mark. And I think what punk did in particular, and of course in the early days of metal, was particularly extreme metal, was you didn't have to be the best player in the world. You just had to want to do it and have something to say. And I think that was the value in it. And so there was an energy level that you shared. And those shows, so I just thought, you know, the whole idea is to rebel. You know, we don't, it doesn't matter where we park our car. It doesn't matter if I paid my fucking electric bill. It doesn't matter if the woman's just took the dog and fucked off. It doesn't matter what I've got to do tomorrow morning. What matters is right now, it's true freedom. I'm going to lose my shit, sing my stuff out, just lose myself. And for a couple of hours a night, in a week, maybe. I mean, it's worth it. There's value in that. And then you become a better person. You know, two things I always said in the old days was, you know, anybody going back from a fucking extreme metal show, they weren't robbing old people and holding people up and nicking their cars and shit. They went home happy, walked all the way home and went to bed and went to sleep. They'd been with their buddies. And, you know, I used to be a Roman Catholic, and I had to go to church every Christmas and every Sunday. And I never saw people coming out of church smiling and jumping around and happy.
You
Yet
get
you
that
go,
finger wag of condemnation, it doesn't really do good for you.
fucking right. But you walk into a Corrosion of Conformity or a fucking, I don't know, Napalm Death show, everybody comes out smiling, like
Yeah.
jolly happy.
You've had
And
a
don't think,
workout, you're sweaty, you're
yeah,
happy,
baby.
the endorphins are
So,
going. Yeah.
exactly. So it's a positive thing. It's a positive energy release, and you should share it together, you know?
Yeah.
And You know, the trouble that you've seen is minimal. You know, it is minimal. I mean, you know, I've seen people get in St. Vitus Club. We played a two-nighter in St. Vitus, and I saw someone go down right in the middle, and everybody parted and helped them back up, checked they were okay, took them to sit down, you
Sure.
know, got them a drink while the show's going on. It's
Right,
like
it's
that's
a
our
it's
community.
as violent as like a Slayer pit can be, or I've been in other pits, Ringworm. I mean, those
Yeah.
guys, it's a violent pit, and
Yeah.
I'm past the age where I like being in the pit. I'm like, no, I'm good, man.
Yes.
I'm a big
Yeah.
guy, but it's like, no, I'm good.
No, yeah.
But it is like if someone goes down, five hands go down to pick
Yeah.
that person up
Totally.
because they're in there, they're having fun, they're not trying to hurt anyone.
Yes,
It
and
is just
because,
there.
yeah, it's a community. We're a community. And the same thing is indicative across the planet. The same thing happens in fucking Manila. The same thing happens in South America, in São Paulo. You know, we go to places where they go, it's really dangerous here. Yep, sure, it's dangerous fucking everywhere. It doesn't matter where you are. Yeah, but our government, yeah, everybody's government, mate, you know? Yeah, but they want this and that. Yeah, everywhere it's the same thing. But we have a community, and that's our strength. You know, it's like the in Turkey, them trying to close our show down and saying, right, you've got to stop. And it was like, well, I haven't finished yet. It went, but you've got to stop, or the police are going to come in. I'm like, the police will have to come in. We haven't finished. You know, these people want to see our show. So I kept going. Then the police came in. I kept playing. Then they shut all the power off. We had no back line. So I did In League with Satan a cappella with the whole audience while the police had to just stand there waiting. And the promoter just going, please stop. And I was going, is everybody happy? Should we go home? And they went, yeah, no, stay. I said, okay, now we got to go. We got to go. But thank you. So, you know, it's about ringing it out and just enjoying that, you know? So it's important. And, you know, like I said the other day as well, to someone, we live in a massive political, yeah, bunch of crap at the minute with all kinds of shit going on in the world. But I don't know anybody who's in the audience when we're in mid-throw and it's all kicking off and everybody's losing themselves. I couldn't tell you who's a Democrat, who's a Republican, who's a conservative, who's a liberal, who's a communist, who's a fascist, who's goes to church, who doesn't believe in God. I don't know anything about anybody. All I know is that we don't care. If one goes down, we all pick them up. That's the true community of us, of people. Yeah, we don't agree with things, but when we're in the zone for our music, it's not about anything else. It's just about us as individuals being part of something bigger than us. And I, you know, sometimes I think I wish I could bottle that shit up and put it in all the world leaders' teas. So they
You get a
wake up in the
fucking
morning and
Nobel
go,
Prize
oh
for peace.
shit. Yeah. You just want one of them to wake up and go, oh, I get it. Fucking hell. We should be listening to fucking Rain and Blood by Slayer. You know, clear that at the UN and sort this shit out.
A couple of years ago, my mom, she had a fall and broke her leg, and she spent a couple of months here in recovery. We were taking care of
Yeah.
her, and I started playing some music for her, and I played Slayer, Rain and Blood. She loved Rain
Awesome.
and Blood. She
God, you
said,
see?
"Yeah," she's like, "She's, oh, I like that band. I like the guitars and the drums." And
There you go.
I'm like, I'm gonna have to tell him. I'm telling my mom, I'm telling my friends, I'm like, yeah, my mom's really getting into Slayer, and they're like, why? I go, yeah, because she's like the Mother Teresa of the world. You know, she just wants to hug all the babies and feed everybody. You know,
Yes,
they
of
thought that was
course.
like the biggest kick. And I'm like, yeah, and I got her onto edibles, but for management, pain management,
Brilliant.
So I'm like,
Brilliant.
hey, mom, we got to get you a YouTube channel, Granny Ganja, you got to try a different pot, you know? And like, I go, that'd be a hit. You'd be great,
Oh shit.
So.
I got this amazing image of your mother now in recovery, up her tits staring out the window, listening to Angel of Death. I just
She,
love
yes.
that.
Oh, yeah. She liked Slayer. And there's a YouTube channel called Two Rockin' Grannies. And so
Oh
she liked,
yes.
and they're like listening to Iron Maiden and Slayer. And she's like
Brilliant.
loving watching them. And like,
Brilliant.
see, you could do that, you know?
You know, I think that's kind of part of the thing is that the you know because the corporate controlling you know the stuff that wants to sell us their pop stars and the and all of that shit that they make money massive money out of you know putting them in arenas and halftime football games and selling multi-platinum albums and giving them awards giving each other awards. You know, there's like it's they class us all as being underground. That metal is kind of underground, and we're still trying to force against it. Some of the hugest rock bands on the planet are heavy metal bands, and we're still trying to puncture that particular membrane because they don't understand it. So But in order for them to keep it out of the conscious of regular people, they kind of badmouth it. You know, not only are they tattooing themselves and piercing their fucking skin, they're listening to stuff we don't understand. They're probably hailing Satan and just doing the worst drugs, right. And they're the worst right. people. And yeah. it's like, you know, these are the guy with the tattoos and the skinhead, leaning on his car while Agnostic Front is blasting out, is the one that's going to come and save you from being hit by that truck. And if you are hit by that truck, he's probably the guy who's going to be giving you mouth to mouth and pummeling your chest and calling a paramedic in for you, because right. that's who we are.
Right, you know, you're so, part of the community. Yes.
Yeah, we don't see any shit except we're all just here to be helpful to each other, and that's the truth, you know.
It's such a positive message, and I really love that, you know. And I've had nothing but great experiences going to shows, and it's such a positive show, no matter who it is. And one thing I love about doing the show, that we've met so many wonderful people, and we've become friends with so many of them, and have them come on the show is just to hang out, or, you know, whatever. And everyone has been wonderful. And I, for every Metallica or Iron Maiden, there are 100 other bands that will probably never get that exposure, but who are every bit as good and who should be, you know, and that's what I find exciting. It's like, I had kind of gotten bored of we call it fatigue, like Iron Maiden fatigue, Metallica fatigue. It's like, nothing against them, they're great bands, but I've heard them my whole life, and I wanted to hear something different. And so being exposed to these underground bands, I was like, oh, you know, bands that I'd never heard before, because they weren't breaking through, like you said, like bands like Deceased and Ringworm and Nonslaughter. It's like Venom, I know, but
But it is a kind of conundrum, because money is power, of course, and in the old days, you know, if you had a big enough following and you toured enough, you'd get on the front of magazines. You know, Slayer, you know, by the time they finished 3 or 4 months in Europe, they were doing 3 or 4 months straight away in the US, back to Europe. That's how John Cazula ran Metallica, and it works. You know, Iron Maiden, at the height of their game, took 5 years to break America. They couldn't get off college radio. Once they got onto mainstream radio, boom, it all happened. But, you know, people put the work in. But there's bands all over doing exactly that. They're the next generation. And we've moved into a kind of a corporate control where, if I've got 10 grand, 20 grand, I'm going to be on the front of Circus magazine. You know, if I don't have that money, you're never going to see me on the front of Circus magazine. It doesn't matter what I do. And it's like, you know, I don't mind that, but how many five page spreads do Metallica need to have? I'm not saying it's not interesting or they're not great, but there's another band out there, like you said, that could do with one page each. You know, get out there, see what's happening, give somebody the space. And so just to have it all based on money is a bit manipulative of the audience, because you assume this is the only thing that's happening when, you know, Merciful Fate's coming through town, King Diamond's coming through town, fantastic. But there was 10 bands just through town you didn't even know about, because, and they were great bands and you missed them. Yes. So, you know, even with the US tour, I tried to do it on each one, but with this one coming up, we're taking Salem's Child out.
Yeah, I'd never heard of them. I saw them, like, I got to check them out.
Oh, they're great. They're great. A Pavement Records band, and they're fucking great. Really nice guys, but a really great band. You're going to really enjoy them.
Good.
But that was it. So they were like, well, what do you want to do about the undercard? I said, every show should book 1, 2, 3 of the bands that they think from their area need the exposure and want to play that. And then we kind of platform ourselves. You know, we'll top it off and give whatever the cream people want. And let's make the undercard exciting. I don't even care. They don't all have to be death metal or black metal. They can be whatever the fuck they want to be. Just let's get them on and let's do that exposure. And, you know, and I'm inviting guests are coming to all the shows. They're going to jump up and do a song, you know, at different places.
Yeah, I heard about that. Bay That's area. Exciting.
So, yeah, it's going to be immense. It's going to be so much fun. So there's a real buzz about it, but it's a different kind of tour. It's not just going, we're going to walk in, take money and go home. It's like, I just can't work like that.
Right.
It's about the music. It's about the people. So the more we can do, the more I want.
That's exciting. I'm loving this conversation. I've got some questions, and we've got games. Yes. That's one of the things that we like to do is play games with our guests too. So I'm going to start with our questions. And for anyone who doesn't know, we're going to give a couple questions about background, and then we're going to work through different aspects of your musical career and just different things, hypotheticals and fun stuff. So,
okay.
One thing I always like to ask our guests is, when did you first get into music?
Well, I was born in the UK, and my father was a teddy boy. So he was, when he was younger, he was into rock and roll. And one of his, Eddie Cochran and Bill Haley and the Comets, And my mum loved all that kind of stuff too. So very early on, I was introduced to rock and roll, really. They used to listen to it. My grandmother was into Jim Reeves and Waylon Jennings and all that
Oh,
kind of
nice.
stuff,
Yeah,
and the country
country.
stuff.
Yeah.
So, between the two, I was, I've just got so used to that kind of music. That really touched me. And then I think it was maybe the turn of the 70s. My mum and dad split up and we moved to Windsor, Ontario. And so we were just across from Detroit. And there was a station, of course, back then it was Journey, Foreigner, all that kind of stuff. I accidentally was taken to a show at the Cobo Hall and saw Kiss in
Oh, nice.
74, 75.
Oh, yeah.
I'd never heard of them and
That's,
I thought
yeah.
it was a fucking circus. I was like, wow. So it was on the Kiss Alive album.
Yes.
And it was, and my mind was blown by that. But before I knew about Kiss, there was a guy at school whose brother was into Motown, and he kept talking about this place in Detroit, and he would play all this Motown, old Motown stuff, and that just I fell in love with. The voices, the beats,
Yeah.
like some Motown just like really touched my soul. And then of course, listening to Ted Nugent and all that kind of stuff, Aerosmith, and then I came back. So that was kind of my mixed match of music. I was it was eclectic. There was
Yeah.
not one thing I was listening to. I was listening to all sorts. Didn't consider playing, because that wasn't what people like me did. That was something else, like acting. It was something else that people did. And we moved back to the UK about 77, and I went to my first school disco. And people were jumping about in black plastic bags to the fucking Sex Pistols, and I thought they were
Nice.
mental. I thought I'd gone to another planet. I was like, "What the fuck is going on there?" But I think with my age, it was a perfect time for me because I see these. I went to every punk show I could go to. I fell in love with the Dickies from California, Agnostic Front, who were just local heroes, and I fell in love with their attack. And Menzies' approach with vocal, and I think I felt dislocated, and this was my way out. And but what I did observe was I observed that these people weren't the best players in the world or the best singers in the world, so they weren't Lou Grahams and Perrys and all of that. They just were screaming their tits out, really angry. And I thought, I can do that. And so, yeah, that's where it all began, really.
Fantastic. Well, what attracted you to black metal as a genre? Because I mean, Venom and now Venom Inc., they paved the way for the what we would call, metal's been black, put in little boxes, but black metal is and speed metal really are the at the origins at the heart of Venom. I mean, that's there would be
I
no
mean,
Slayer, those bands without Venom.
yes. I mean, originally they considered themselves power metal, and which Metallica followed suit with their title of power metal, and so the thrusting kind of happened a bit later from the Bay Area. That sound that Dave Mustaine, James Hetfield triplet sound on the guitar, which then exposed it, expanded itself. And you had black metal probably found its roots more in Bathory than it did in kind of Venom, but they took the title of black metal. But the whole point about the black metal title for Venom was that during interviews with Kerrang and stuff, they go, blah, 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 because you're a heavy metal band. Well, they were showing that you've got a heavy metal band to be in a heavy metal magazine, and on the front cover is Jon Bon Jovi. So they were like, well, if Jon Bon Jovi is heavy metal, we're fucking not heavy metal, are we? And they were like, well, if you're not heavy metal, what are you? They went black metal. And so the whole idea of the sound of that album was to give an identity to Venom, not to create a genre, not to create something like
We
as
are
a
not
full.
Bon Jovi, right?
We're not Bon Jovi. That's what it said. We are, our sound is this, and we call this black metal. So when you fast forward into the 90s and you have, younger people now going, Venom's not black metal. It's like, well, actually, if you think they're the only black metal band, as far as the title of what they call themselves
The
is, what,
originators.
yes, that, so that their sound was black metal. The genre is something completely different. So possibly, as Conrad said before in interviews, maybe they should have just used a different name to it and then kept them separate. But the idea was to not to sound like anybody else and to give our own identity. And that was the whole idea, which it still is. You know, now we go and play an extreme festival, people say, well, you're more like kind of black and roll, you know, you're more rock and roll than you are extreme. And it's like, now we are. Yeah.
Yeah. 40 years things get more and more extreme as you go. There was no Cannibal Corpse. There was no Carcass of those things back then.
No, but, Mayhem, Immortals and David Bulgers. None of that stuff. Because the thing is, as well, it's like, you know, cars are faster now than they used to be. Engines are bigger than they used to be. Planes go faster than they used to be. Travel in general, you know, the only things that are smaller than they used to be is the food we're buying, the value we're getting, and the fucking money in our wallet.
Yeah, it's more chemicals than food, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. But the progression of everything becomes more. So if you go, we're the most extreme band on the planet. Well, next week someone's going to be faster than you, like heavier than you, more guttural than you, because that's what we want to do. We want to break a boundary. We never, with humanity, we never want to get to the end. We want to keep pushing, and that happens in music too. So it develops, and you end up with something glorious like the explosion of black metal as a genre, you know?
Yeah.
Which was, you know, had satanic elements maybe, but like all the church burnings and all that bullshit, it was more about recapturing, as Cawthon did, recapturing the spirit of the Scandinavians, of the Vikings in the north. You know, they had this rich history of their own gods and their own mythology, and it was practically eradicated in light of Christianity, much like what happened in Latin America and Spain and places like that. So that was a shout out to go, we want our identity back. Again, like the punk thing, we're screaming, we want our identity back. God save the queen, a fascist regime. She made you a moron, you know? It was anti-state, anti-government, and even at 60, you know, when you go on stage and I sing Sons of Satan to us all, it means something. And I want people to, you know, I tell them, you know, when you wake up tomorrow, hopefully you'll have had a great time. And when you're on your way to work or on your way to school or whatever's happening and someone gives you flips you the finger, just remember, you tell them who you fucking are. You're the Sons of Satan. And hopefully that empowers them, you know?
Yeah.
It empowers them.
So that's great. When I describe you for people who have no idea who Venom Inc is or anyone, you know, because they're just not into metal, I said, Tony's, imagine he's the guy you want on your side in a bar fight, you know, in a street fight. He's that guy. And I show him a picture, I go, oh yeah, we can see that, you know. I said, but he's like the nicest guy on the fucking planet, you know. You had mentioned some of your musical heroes and music that you like, and like our backgrounds are very similar. My dad was kind of eclectic, all over the place, from country, bluegrass, and a lot of Motown, you know, and American rock, like the Beach Boys, you know, and then
classic,
you know, Beatles, classic, you know. Yeah. So I grew up in a household of music that all kinds of musical tastes, and I'm grateful for that. So have you ever met any of your musical heroes or idols as you were growing up? And if so, what was that like?
Well, you know, that was my biggest hero.
Oh, yes, Lemmy.
Yeah. And so, I was very fortunate. You know, I saw them obviously in the early days, accidentally in 78 with a punk band. You know, I've told the story many times. I went to see a punk band who were opening for them, and I didn't know who they were, and I wasn't interested. So, and my buddies were going, you should go and see this band that we're playing with. And I was like, yeah, I've never heard of them. And they went, yeah, but they're kind of cool. I was like, yeah, what are they like? Well, they kind of got long hair and wear leather jackets. I went, fucking hippies? I don't want to see hippies. And they went, well, they're not really hippies. I mean, they look like it. They're more like bikers, but they're, you know, the music's kind of punky. Anyway, I go into the club, squash all the way down the front, lights come on, boom. There it is, Motorhead, the three of them, you know, Lemmy, Phil, and Eddie. And I was just, you know, I walked out like someone had just dumped a truck of bricks on me. I was like, wow. And, you know, I took what I thought the Dickies were with their rapid speed delivery, and then Motorhead, and thought, fuck, what would it be like? Would that blow your mind, you know? And so I would try and get autographs. I was never a legger. I always felt comfortable. I still uncomfortable. I still do going backstage. Lots of opportunity to get pictures and talk to my heroes, but I just don't know. I don't like bothering them, you know, because I know what kind of how it works. So I very rarely do that. But, you know, I did meet Lemmy a few times. I did get to talk to him, and I talked to him not long before he died, coaxed by a friend. I'd went to see him in Italy, and someone said, you know, you should maybe come and say hi. And I was like, no, I don't know, I don't know. And they said, but what if you don't get the opportunity again? And that hit me real hard, and I thought, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I got to go and just say hi, just come to say hi, you know, and just to say, you know, if you stop doing this, it's okay. You know,
Yeah.
you are you, and
Right.
the music's there, and you can just, you know, relax a bit and just enjoy it. And he said, but this is who I am, and this is how I'm going. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, well, if I don't get another opportunity to meet you or see you ever again, let's just say that happens, what's your advice? And he said, always be truthful and always be respectful to your fans. And that's it. That's it. You know, the rest is all bullshit, but that's the two things. And that's how it is. And, you know, I played in, it was so wonderful playing, you know, in San Francisco, at the show in San Francisco. It was on my birthday. A guy called Brian Wu, who did a magazine called Whiplash back in 81. And we were in it, Atomcraft, with Venom, with Raven, with Metallica, and David just left Metallica and formed Megadeth. And that was the magazine. And I was very honored to be in that. And we had a mutual friend who was the editor. And then Brian called me and said, oh, you guys are playing in San Francisco. And this was with Abaddon, was still in the band, about 216 or something. I said, yeah. He said, can I get a plus one? I got a guest who wants to come. So yeah, of course. Anyway, we play the show. At the end of the show, I'm my own tech, so I'm on my hands and knees gathering all my stuff up. And the TM, who was a guy who was a guitarist in St. Vitus out of Texas, came and said, Tony, you should go upstairs. There's somebody waiting for you. And I said, yeah, I'll be up in a minute. I just want to get my stuff. I'll do that. I said, no, I'll do it. Yeah, but I can do it. I said, what, you can do it this night, but you can do it every other night. I said, I'll fucking do it. And then I'll go up. And he said, yeah, but James is waiting. I went, James who? And he went, it's fucking James Hetfield. I said, well, he'll wait, won't he? So I got my stuff.
Yes,
and
he
I
will.
Went upstairs. And when I went up there, he was smiling like when he was 18, you know, and it was the same guy. And he was just as happy, and it was so lovely to see him. And we had a great chat, and took some pictures, and just chatted, you know. So I'm fortunate that I get to meet Jello Biafra. You know, I get to meet people that I respected for so long that were my peers, and some of them were my heroes. And then I get to meet them on the same level, you know. I always feel very humbled about that. You know, but it's as much as seeing Tom Warrior, you know, from Trypticon and Celtic Frost and Hellhammer, where, you know, who said to me, fucking hell, there's not many of us left. I know, mate. I know where you're going. Or hanging with Paul Di'Anno, who just passed, you know.
Yeah.
Because he'd lived not so far from me. And, you know, so that's wonderful. I used to work for Queen, and Nico McBain would come in and go, oh, mate, how are you doing? Like, you still here? And I'm going, yeah, well, what can you do? You know, I'm not you. Is it? I'm not on a plane. But, you know, so, yeah, I'm very fortunate. I am fortunate. A lot of my movie heroes I've met, I've been in some movies with them, and my musical heroes I've met, the ones I wanted to meet, you know, and there's still time to meet the others.
Yeah, that's
but,
nice.
Yeah.
I like the advice that Lemmy gave, because my follow-up question was, how has meeting those heroes influenced how you respond to fans who want to meet you? And it sounds like that you are going to take the time to be, like you said, respectful of your fans and appreciate and kind of bring that humility and staying humble and that easy.
Well, yes,
it's too
because
easy to get that worship thing going.
It is, you know, and the thing is that, you know, when I hear stories that make me shudder, when I hear stories about people's reaction to their fans, and I think, you know, you spend the first fucking 5 or 6 years of your band life trying to ask all your friends to bring friends to your little pub shows and get a following. And then you manage to get a following, and then you try and expand that by touring, and you get more following, and you want to encourage people to come and follow you. So you're spreading all your leaflets and doing all that, and you work really hard to get people to like you. And then you get a record deal, and fast forward 20 years, and you're flipping off people who want to just ask you for a photograph, and you haven't got 2 minutes to take a photograph. Can I get your autograph? I don't have time. I do it in a minute and they fuck off. And I mean, I just think, you know, it takes 2 seconds to take a photograph. It takes 2 seconds to sign an autograph or listen to someone's story. But you don't know the impact. Yes. You know, this person in front of you, girl, boy, young, old, whoever they are, maybe this is the only opportunity they've ever had to talk to you. And you might meet 1,000 people in a week. You know, and so you don't know how important it is to them. And mm-hmm. I want to know that, I want them to know that I know they're there.
Yeah, because great.
If I was a fan, that's what I wanted. So yeah. I think of every person who comes up to me, whether I'm tired, hungry, limping, knackered, whatever it is, had no sleep, you know, they're me. Yeah. What would I want? Just sure. a moment, just to say hi.
Yeah, that's it. No, that's great. Important. That's great. Because we've all shared stories. We've had stories where we've had wonderful interactions with people, and we also have those nightmare scenarios.
Yeah.
And Gene Simmons is the one for me. And I always talk about that. I won't bore you with that story, but I got my revenge. Let's just say, you know, because he was a dick to me at the meet and greet, and so when I got my seat front stage, front row. I was right in front of his microphone. I'm like, I'm going to fuck with this guy during the show. Like, you know? And so I started like pulling my shirt up and like slapping my belly at him. And I saw him get like so pissed, but he can't break. You know, I'm like, fuck you,
what
Gene.
Did he do?
Yeah. So I'm like, but everyone else, you know, was great, but it changes your view. Like
it that, does.
I'm like, no, I'm the other guys in Kiss were always great. Gene, he's an asshole, but
well,
it's just nice to be refreshing.
People say you should never meet your heroes, but I think you should meet your heroes because, you know, and you know, if they're dickheads, it that doesn't mean that you don't like their music or particular music, but it does flavor you into them as a personality. But I think that's even worse. I mean, that was at a meet and greet.
Yeah.
That was, you've paid for a meet and greet by him to act like a dick. It's like, hang on, I've paid you more money.
Yes, exactly.
Than I already had.
Yeah, respect. So yeah, exactly.
It's wrong. Yeah.
It is totally wrong. Oh,
yeah.
All right. I'm gonna switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about your creativity and your writing process. So, can you talk a little bit about your creative process when writing music and lyrics?
Well, kind of, you know, because me and I mean, of course, I've written by myself, but me and Jeff write quite a lot together and kind of separately, you know, and our processes are quite different. He will commit riffs. He'll be making riffs and have, you know, he'll tell everybody, like, oh, I've got like a 400 riffs on my phone, you know, as he just keeps coming up with ideas and makes notes of them. And then he'll go through them and see what works with what works. And my process is remarkably different. You know, I'm not recording them all the time. You know, I see and hear things. But for me, it's a case of, I'll just sit down and start playing the guitar and something will happen. You know, I can't predict it. But something will happen and I'll go, I like that. And then I'll look and I'll like it. And it's almost like it's building itself. And then once I have the music and I think, yeah, I kind of like that. I don't have a title. I don't have an idea of what I want to say. And then I even wait until I've committed it to recording. So do a drum track and put some bass on there and put the guitar down. And then I just listen to it because it will tell me what it wants to say. It will say if it's an angry song, it'll tell me who it's angry at. If it's a, you know, a darker song, it'll tell me what lyric it wants me to focus on. So it's almost like it has a life of its own and I see it out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I see all music in images. That's kind of how I see it, you know.
Sure.
So it's like it's already there. I'm just not picking the fruit yet. And as soon as I start to pick one, the apples start falling and all I'm doing is gathering them up. And that's kind of how it feels for me,
you know,
because I think also it's a bit like the shows, you know, if they're too contrived and you could do like, this is our set, all these songs,
yeah.
I can do 30 dates, we'll rehearse for 2 weeks. We know where we're going to stand when the pyro go off. We know where the stage set is. We know when we start, where we break, where we finish. And that's the same for 30 shows. Now, that for me would be like watching you paint your back room. I'd be like,
yes.
You know what? I don't want that. I don't want to know what the fuck's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, last night they played Die Hard. All of a sudden, you're not playing Die Hard, you're playing something else. Like, oh, shit, you know? And it just kicks off. It could go anywhere. Anything could happen. And that's what's exciting. That's what's exciting, you know?
I love that. Can I ask what you're smoking?
Oh, this is... I got diagnosed with a lung disorder. Oh. So I'm not supposed to smoke anymore.
Okay.
You know, so I've this is like one of those IQS things or whatever. So recommended. It's got a little dummy thing in there with a bit of nicotine in. Then it heats up and then that's it. You get a few draws out of it and then you're done. So I only do it when I'm like really thinking, man, I could do with a drink.
I get it. Okay. Yeah.
But it was a choice thing. It was like, you know, I could either keep smoking the poison or tour. So the choice was easy, you know.
Yeah.
Music's above everything else, you know.
I love that. Let's talk a little about touring. How do you take care of your voice on the road?
Marlborough helped and Jack Daniels. And those were my two best friends. You know, I've been very fortunate because I kind of have a bit of a growl. And, you know, I have a good range. So I would do some voice exercises and breathing exercises. But in the US, it's a bit more difficult because everybody wants to have the air conditioning, and which is terrible for the voice. So I would rely on my licorice tea, very hot licorice tea, keep the voice supple. But I've been very lucky. You know, in the old days, Venom didn't do many dates back to back because Conrad might do two or three shows and then he was done. You know, his voice was stripped. But I could do 30 on the bounce with no days off. Gets a bit more gruff when I'm talking to people because you're shouting after the show. It's not
sure.
The shows.
Yeah.
It's the trying to talk. People want to talk to you at high volume.
Yeah.
Before you go on stage and after you come on stage, it's like, so you're screaming all the time. And then you do the show. But I've been very fortunate, touch wood, that only once did I kind of lose the voice. And I was really kind of sick. I did a commercial. We were on a run of the West Coast, and I did a commercial for TV for a big company. It was just a voiceover, but we were on tour, so I had to hire a car and drive to LA from San Francisco overnight, straight after I came off stage. And so by the time I got into the studio with no sleep, my voice was pretty fucked. I got to the show that night, and Evil Dead were on with us, so Juan Garcia's bassist came backstage and they brought me this red Rickenbacker bass, which is very rare. They're very rare.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be cursed, you know, and he had one. So he'd been telling me about it. I said, oh, shit, I got to see that when I'm in fucking Los Angeles. He brought it to the show and said, you can play this tonight. And I couldn't speak to him. He said, what's wrong with you? I said, I lost my voice, you know, and he was like, fuck. I said, I can't do the show. He went, you have to. It's fucking sold out. You have to. And I was like, how the fuck? I can't even sing. And he went, it doesn't matter. Tell them to sing. So I was like, oh, okay. So I went on stage. I went, hey, everybody. Yeah, as you can hear, my voice is fucked. So can you sing all the songs tonight? If I just play it, they're all, yay! We had the best night. We had the best fucking night.
That's a lot of love.
Amazing.
That's love coming back at you. That's great.
It was so good that I woke up the next day and my voice was fine. And I thought, fucking hell, they cured me.
That's fantastic. Yeah. What is your favorite food to eat on the road?
Oh, wow. That's difficult because it depends where you are, because the world is a cornucopia of amazing food. The difficulty with America, and because we're coming to America, let's focus on the US. The difficulty with the US is everything tastes so fucking good. So it's like everything, you know, it's like, oh my God, from Red Lobster to Wendy's to In-N-Out Burger, it's like, man, forget about it. Pizza after shows, it's like, you're killing me here. I'm going to go back about 50 pounds heavier. But, you know, and God forbid you walk into a Walmart because the first thing you get hit with is like the goodies section is like, fuck. So that kills me. But yeah, just, you know, we always go to a GNC. I get my protein powders and my creatine, and I try and buy some good food and some fruit, and I try and stay as clean as I can on the road. Every now and then I might do a splurge and get myself some kind of pudding or cake because, you know, it's America, it's so good, you got
right.
to. But I treat myself as good as I can. And because I'm, you know, I'll have some booze when I'm on the road. I don't drink when I'm at home, but I'll have my Jack when I'm on the road. And because I was smoking, you know, I thought, well, yeah, I'm already trying to kill myself. I should try and be healthy too. So,
Well, when I come to see you in January at No Class, I'll bring some local goodies for you.
I love you. I love you. Okay, it's a
I'll
deal.
bring some apple fritters or something. Something.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Hell yeah! Thank
So,
you.
okay. You have lived your life on the road. What is the most outrageous touring story you can tell me? We have heard all kinds of crazy shit, but you must have seen something just bonkers other than the show where the people were singing for you. But what has been the craziest memory of your life on the road?
Well, that's difficult because over 40 years, there's been lots. There has been lots, some real fun stuff. I think one of the craziest one. Oh, well, it's crazy. I'm sure there's crazy ones, but one of the funniest things was we were in Germany, and it was in the mid 80s, and I think we were playing somewhere like Frankfurt, and we were in the old town, and there was like a whole ring of pubs. So there was this center section with all pubs, like pub, 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 pub. So bar, 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 and I don't know, 50 bars or something. And we all had a great idea to go. We were parked down by the river on our tour bus, and there was an embankment which was all trees. So you had to walk along and go up a bridge, and then you were in the pub area, the bar area. And so we went, you know what we should do? We have one drink in every bar before they close. So we started off in one bar, like, drink, right, next. Drink right next, drink right next. Of course, you know, and of course, we were fucking off our tits. Some people were falling off. And then we came out and it was like, right, we got to go back to the bus, we get some food. And then, geez, man, I'm fucking totally smashed here. And I got into the middle of the road and we were dicking around. And someone tooted the horn behind me and I ignored it. And someone's going, oh, someone's, you know, hammering the horn, tone, get out the road. I went, ah, fuck him, you know, and I took my pants down and shined him a moody, you know, and then they really beeped the horn, and I turned around and I got my cock in my hand. I was going, fuck you, and it was the cops, and they just got out of the car, and I was like, fuck, so I ran across the road with my pants around my ankles, my dick out, my arse out, and I jumped over this fence thinking I was going to hit, like, hide in the trees. But as I jumped over the fence, I was on this embankment. So I rolled all the way down with my pants and my dick in my hand. And I was like, ah, I hit the concrete. And when I stood up, I was right outside the bus door. I hit the button and went in the bus and just went and hid in my bunk. The driver came on and went, who the fuck was that? I went, it's just me. Just me. He's like, what happened there? I said, the police are coming. Tell them I'm not here.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just one of many.
That's fantastic. What's the one thing you like to ask for in your writer?
Jack Daniels.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm happy. As long as there's Jack and Coke and some ice, then I'm a happy puppy.
Good, good. All right. Now,
and I didn't, just to add an addendum there, because there has been people, because the way I now have my mic stand, and because I drink some Jack and, Jack and Coke, people are like, oh, who the fuck do you think he's Lemmy? But I just want to make this point. No, I don't think I'm Lemmy, because nobody could be Lemmy.
No,
but
no.
He was my hero. And I only ever drank blue tequila, like white. Aguave, that's what I drank, with ice. That was it. And not beer. Just that. And then the day he died, we were on tour, we were in Raleigh, and the tech came in and said, oh, Lemmy just went. And I said, shit, okay, get me a Jack and Coke with ice. And he went, but you don't drink Jack and Coke. I went, I do now. Oh,
yeah.
And put my mic stand up. And so the reason I've left that there and I have my Jack and Coke is because I didn't want to lose him when I lost him.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't want to think about him not being there.
Yes.
So if I walk on stage and I've got a bottle of Jack in my hand and I see the mic stand like that, it's almost as if he's going to turn up. So I'm bringing his Jack out and I'm going to see him at the mic. So that's why I'm doing it every night.
I love
it's a
that.
Tribute to him because he's my hero. So
no, I totally get it. I had a brief Lemmy moment. It was at the Ozfest, and the shame of all shame, they were playing on the second stage, the tiny stage.
Yeah.
So I'm like, fuck, Limp Bizkit's playing on the main stage and Motorhead's on the small stage. Fuck you guys. But anyway, so they're playing. So between songs, I yell, I love you, Lemmy. And without missing a beat, he goes, I love you too. I'm like, okay.
Yes.
I had my
Yeah.
moment with Lemmy. I will take that to my grave, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's a little bit.
And you
This
know,
is.
just another thing I just want to add, when he passed, I was when we got to the Rainbow, we were playing the Roxy, and his old manager came to the show, and then afterwards I went to the Rainbow, and just to pay my tribute, and someone said, "Oh, Todd wants to have a word with you," and I was like, "With me?" And he was like, "Yeah." So I went over, and I was, "Hey, Todd, how you doing?" And he was like, "Man, I watched the show. It was fucking great. Yeah." Said, "I've got something for you." Said something to his guy who went to a car, came back out and gave me the Lemmy tin. Now he had these made for merchandise, but in here was the last pick that Lemmy had and Todd was carrying for him.
So
And he
nice.
said, "Inside there's the last pick I didn't get to give him. I want to give it to you." So I was like, "No way."
Oh,
And
wow.
then a very good close friend of his, Peter Vollmer, said, "I want to send you a gift," and sent me a shirt. And it was Lemmy's t-shirt that he saw the arms off and he wore for the Everything Louder tour. And so I've got his shirt that he wore. And the first thing I did when I opened was I was like, "Oh shit, no way." And I smelled it. And then I wrote to Pete and I said, "Pete, I got the shirt." He was like, "Oh man, yeah, he gave it to me. I wanted to give it to you. And he wore it for that tour." I said, "I know, I know." I said, "But did you wash it?" And he was like, "Of course." And I went, "What the? Why did you wash it?" And he's going, "Well, it was stinky." I was like, "But it was Lemmy stinky.
That's
I
right.
wanted it to have his sweat there." I said, "Oh my God."
Yeah.
So I've even considered cutting a piece off to get it DNA tested, get his
Oh.
DNA in a little vial, and then putting that in me in ink, because I know that James and everybody who got
Yeah.
some of his ashes put it in a tattoo. And I
Yeah.
thought, I'm going to go one better, and I'm going to get his DNA extracted from his T-shirt.
We can clone
So,
them.
yeah.
You know, I've seen Jurassic Park and it'll end well.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
yeah.
Well, imagine me walking on stage and pulling my shirt, and there's a little Lemmy just
He's
hanging
curling
in
out of you.
the
Yes,
shirt.
that would be nice. That would be
That would
nice.
be mental, yeah. I'd be so
Yes.
happy. Yeah.
Now, this question I have never asked anyone, and I'm like, why have I never asked this before? But you guys are getting ready to do this huge tour in the States, and Curran told me your future plans. The logistics that go into organizing a tour must be incredibly challenging. Can you explain how you arrange an extended tour? Because you've got dates all over the place. How
Yeah.
the fuck do you do that?
Well, people always go, it doesn't matter how many dates you post. There's always someone who goes, "Oh, I see, you don't give a fuck about, somewhere,
Yeah, you're always going to
particularly.
miss something.
Fuck you. You're not going to come here." Well, and it's like, listen, I want to do every show and everywhere. I want to play your backyard, your mum's garage. I want to play your grandfather's fucking mobile home. I'll play everywhere. But we can't logistically do that because there's a cost involved. It's notorious if a US band comes to the UK, they don't need visas. They just come over. But it doesn't work the other way. So we have to apply for visas to work in the States 6 months in advance. And the cost can go up to about $10,000, $15,000. And if they, for whatever reason, you've filled the form in wrong, you ticked the wrong box, you made a mistake, the immigration doesn't go, "Oh, you made a mistake. Can you correct that?" They just go, "No," and you have to reapply, but you don't get your money back. So
That's
anything you
bullshit.
paid, yeah, and you can't do it yourself, and you can't do it. You have to do it with an immigration lawyer. So the actual visa itself costs maybe $1,500, but the whole process is what you're paying the lawyer for. So it's
Yeah.
very expensive. And so you have to plan well in advance. And if you don't do that, lots of bands cancel, go, "Oh, we had visa problems." Yeah, you didn't book them well in advance. And you didn't have enough money to expedite them. You can expedite a visa, so it can cost you about $6,000. If you're late and it's 2 weeks to go to tour, that's enough time to expedite, but you have to pay another $6,000 on top of your $6,000. Now 12 grand, and they'll give it to you. But if you haven't got the money to do that and you haven't planned it properly, you're fucked. You're fucked. So it's like, do it well in advance, plan it well in advance. And also, so many bands go out in the US, there's so many bands touring that I might want to be playing New York and then here on the way to Chicago, Cleveland, and work with Detroit and, work our way across. But what if I can get the show in New York on that date? I can get the show in Cleveland on that day, but Detroit's out, Chicago's out, so I have to go somewhere else. So I might have to come back to Buffalo and then go through Toronto to come back down to Detroit. So it is a bit problem logistically. So, and sometimes you want to play this venue, but you can't get that venue. So you have to look at another venue. Maybe it's a smaller venue. Maybe it's a pub. Maybe it's a bigger venue. But you have to try and find, is there a venue that A, the local promoter wants to take the package, can pay the bill, and B, has the space, because maybe he doesn't have space. If it's a Tuesday night, maybe some promoters won't want to take you because it's a Tuesday night. And unlike a lot of the places in Europe, for example, if you're going to go to a show in Manchester, it takes me an hour to drive up there, maybe an hour and a half. If I go to Birmingham, I could drive up there. If it's in London, it's 20 minutes in the tube and the underground, or to drive. But if you're in America, fucking hell, like someone said, I can't come to the show in Atlanta. I was going to come. And I said, well, you come, be your guest. And he was like, but it's 8 hours drive.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not getting close enough for him. If it was 4 hours, he might give it a go. But 8 hours, I'm like, you can't drive fucking 16 hours. You know, you just can't. So wait till part two. So what I try and do is book as many shows as I can to get as much of it in as I can. And then what's left, I put in part two and try and rebook that in advance so that we can do two hits if we can't do it all in one go, you know. But this one, pretty extensive, and we've done it over a month, but we'll have to do the second month so we can hit Portland, Seattle, places like that we just couldn't get to on this one because they didn't have space for us. So, it does take a lot of work. And, you know, the thing is, because I manage the band and do all of that, it's like, for me, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days. And whatever else I'm doing in my life, I have to do that as well. Yeah. You know, I don't get the chance. Mantis used to go, why don't you just be play the artist game and just relax. It's too stressful and just, you know, focus on going on stage with a guitar. But it's like, I'd love to, but who's going to do the work? Someone needs to do it. And so, you know, before the show, where people go, I'll come down to the show, we'll have a meet, you can come and have some food and we'll hang out. And it's like, well, I'd love to do that, but I got to do press and then I got to get to the venue to do sound check. And then I got to do the meet and greet, and then I've got to do press, and then I've got to get ready for the show, and then I got to go on stage and play, and then I got to get some sleep and some food after, and we've got to get away at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, for me, it's like it's nonstop. So, but saying that, I might not be able to come to your house and eat grandma's apple pie and eat your meatloaf, but I certainly have got time to stand and have a drink with you and say hello, take some pictures and spend some time with you. So I pride myself on that, you know.
That's good.
And when people go, you know, you're fucked, why don't you just go and go back to the bus and just leave it? It's like, well, yeah, but I can sleep later, isn't it? What am I going to do tomorrow? I can wake up late, and maybe they can't. Maybe they have to go. So I try and service as much as I can. But yeah, it's difficult. But there's worse shit you can be doing. You know what I mean, Mark?
Yeah, so. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, I know. The first time when I saw you play last year, and I saw you were walking through the venue. I'm like, if I kind of froze. I'm like, do I say hi? Like, I don't know, you know, and I just wasn't sure because, you know, and I've always been kind of cautious because, you know, it's different when I'm seeing a local band, and it, you know, and so, but now I know when I see I'm going to go up to you, Tony, we're going to say hi, take a picture. We're going to be cool.
Yeah, you will. Exactly.
And I'll have your apple fritters. So
yes, you will. Yes. I'll make sure I've got a gift for you now. I'm gonna bring you some special English treats. I'm gonna make sure I've got
fantastic.
It in my pocket for you.
Oh,
we'll
wonderful.
Do a trade off. You won't like what I'm bringing you, but it's an English treat. Trust me.
I'll take it. That's awesome.
You at least try it. I gave it to Chuck Billy once and he went, "What the fuck is that?" And I was like, they love it in England. He was like, "Well, fucking, they're gonna have it. They can keep it there, but you'll have to
I'll
try
take
it."
That's great. Okay, now we're gonna switch gears again. We're gonna talk some hypothetical situations. These are some of the things that are just we'd like to answer these kinds of questions for our guests. Okay, I kind of have an I know at least one person I think you're gonna choose for this, but I want you to create a supergroup, not including anyone you've ever performed with.
Right.
Which three or four musicians, past or present, would you want to play with?
Oh, shit. That's like, wow. Oh my God, that's so hard because there's so many amazing people. I'd have loved to play with Bill Haley. I'd have loved to have done some stuff with Glenn Miller, believe it or not.
Wow,
With the big band stuff, because that stuff just, I just love that stuff. Any Motown act, any Motown, but D Ross and the Supremes, bosh, or the Jersey Boys there, Frankie Valli, that would have like been wow.
nice.
But then all the funk stuff, all the disco stuff, there was some amazing stuff going on with Parliament and all of that kind of movement. I mean, drummers, it's like everybody from John Bonham to Bill Ward, Lombardo, who's like one of my all-time
Fucking
favorites.
amazing.
Yeah, Rhymer from Anvil.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I heard Forging Fire blew my mind, and I was so excited. And I remember people going, "Yeah, but the drums, what the fuck's he doing?" I said, "Oh, he's just playing." And they went, "Yeah, but it's that's not how you play the drums. You're supposed to just keep the beat." He's like fucking
God.
all over the place. I was like, "Oh my God!" But Neil Peart, Geddy Lee, Alex Lifeson, Max Webster. I mean, just on and on. Joe Perry, Hendrix. Could you imagine? Zeppelin, Bacchanal. Could you imagine doing bass with Zeppelin or The Who? John Entwistle, Cream, Eric Clapton. I mean, Ginger Baker. So, Bacchanal, a super group, is
Like,
like,
yeah, it's a
yeah.
it is hard to pick. Yeah, and you've listed so many great ones. You mentioned that, the swing, Glenn Miller. Do you like what Brian Setzer does with his big
Love
orchestra?
it, yes, love it,
It's
love it.
fantastic.
Oh, so good. I was always a Chester fan for the Stray Cat. I just loved that whole rockabilly kind of
Yes.
approach
Those
and
that
his
early
playing,
'60s
Oh
vibe,
man,
yes, so
just
good.
insane, And yeah, the stuff he does, I love it. I just love it. I love the vibe that he makes it feel real, It's not
It's
just a
not posing. He
pastiche or
loves it.
something he likes.
This has
Yeah.
been consistent with him since the beginning of the
Yeah.
Stray Cats, that
Yeah.
50s, 60s, from the doo-wop to the rockabilly, those
Yeah.
sensibilities with like the flames and the hot
Yeah.
rods. It is
Yeah.
it's like the way Rob Zombie treats with like hot
Yes.
rods, like the 70s
Yeah.
sensibilities, 60s,
Yeah.
with the hot rods and the horror. It's like
And
this
I
is part
think,
of who he is.
yes, and I think that's it. There's two people that I always kind of expose as being real artists, the kind of like Andy Warhol, a Geiger kind of in my mind. And one of them is Glenn Danzig, and the other one's Tom Gabriel Fischer. Because both of those artists, there's lots of stories about them being a bit wacky here and a bit wacky there, a bit opinionated or whatever. But both those people are kind of my favorite kind of artists because they're incredibly creative on a different level. And they come up with things that initially you might think, I'm not sure what's going on there. But then you just get it, you get to appreciate it. And they create what they believe. It might not be what everybody wants, but it's what they believe
They're
in.
true to
And
themselves, like Bowie or
yes,
Zappa, where they
yes,
were very much
like
like that
Zappa,
too.
yes. Totally. Great examples. Bowie and Zappa. It's like, I'm not trying to get a top 40 record with this. I'm just creating something that I believe in is really cool. And it ends up being amazing. And yeah, there should be
I get
more
it.
of us doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, they just like, I get it, because not everything they like or not everything they do I like, and I'm okay with that because I
Yeah.
know that they are being true to themselves and like
Yes.
trying something, and I
Yes.
admire that. There are albums that I really like of Bowie's and Zappa's, and the other ones I'm like, nah, I'm good, but it doesn't
Completely.
matter. Yeah, and it's like
No.
I will listen to the stuff I like, and I will appreciate them for who they are as artists.
Yeah, yeah. And those people as artists don't expect you to get everything either. They like you to like it if you like it, but if you don't, it doesn't stop them doing it. It doesn't change them from doing it. And they don't excuse themselves for doing
No,
it.
because their styles are so varied.
Yes.
And like my favorite Bowie album is Scary Monsters.
Yeah.
Ashes to Ashes, that's my favorite Bowie
Yeah.
song. It's just
Yeah.
something about that is sad and mournful and
Yeah.
quirky and odd, and like the video
Yeah.
is so fucked up. But to me,
Yeah.
it's like it epitomizes who he is as an artist, and I just
Yeah.
love that album. I'm going to go back to, because I could talk with you for 5 hours, and I know
Okay.
I'm
I
going to,
know.
I don't
Yeah.
want to take you up all night.
That's good.
Okay. The next question here, hypothetical. An alien shows up and asks you to represent metal in three songs. What would those songs be and why? Another easy question to
Yeah,
answer.
I guess. I mean, it would be Ace of Spades. I mean, I don't want to say Ace of Spades, but it would have to be Ace of Spades
Yes.
because I think that's one of the most recognized communicative songs in or in everything. You know, everybody hears that and just goes, "Oh, fucking Ace of Spades." You know, it doesn't matter what genre you're in. So I think that would have to be one of them. For me, it would be a Slayer song, of course. But I think if I think on a bigger term than that, I guess something like "Smoke on the Water" by Deep
Oh,
Purple.
yeah.
You know, it's because it's got that rock and roll and that heavy feel to it. You know, as much as Zeppelin, I know that's pre-metal. I mean, there's so much to pick from, isn't there? Obviously, a Metallica one would come to mind, but I think I'd probably go for Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath. So I'd say Black Sabbath, Ace of Spades, and yeah, something like Smoke on the Water. So there's a classic in there. So people, that gives you a whole progressive thing, you know. If you're, that's old school because I'm old, but I mean, if you're more modernistic, then I don't know. Yeah, I think it would be, well, pitching, because then you'd have to go into Pantera, so it's a bit difficult. But I think though, if an alien came down, I go, this is where whatever you hear began in its infancy and progressed into what you might hear now. So.
I love that because everyone we interview ask this question to, they all have different answers because some go to like, well, you got to represent these
Yeah.
types of metal, and other ones are like personal favorites, and I get it, and I love Ace of Spades that you pulled out because when I introduce people to Motorhead, I'm like, okay, we gotta play Ace of Spades, and then I love I'm So Bad Baby I Don't Care
Yeah. Oh,
because that
yeah.
first line, I make love to mountain lions. I'm like,
Yeah.
fuck, if that is not Lemmy, then if you don't get it, if you don't get it within the first
Yeah.
5 seconds of that song, you're just
Yeah.
not gonna get it,
Yeah.
So okay, the last hypothetical, Tony. If you could be any superhero for 24 hours, who would you be and what would you do with your day of powers?
Wow, that's really cool, because there are some really cool ones. I suppose ultimately, I think I'd have to be, I mean, I'd love to be Batman, but I'd probably be Superman. And what I would do was I would spend the day trying to correct everything that's wrong, trying to teach and saving people, save everybody, and hopefully, I love the idea. I love the idea of a being that dedicates his life to just helping people. I know there's lots of superheroes that, maybe Iron Man and stuff, who was a favorite when I was growing up in Ontario. Iron Man, the Hulk, I loved the Hulk, his devastating power, the muscles and but I think the positive creation of Superman as a positive entity to defend people who were in need of defending, I think that's still habitually inside me. And I feel that, when I watch things with the news and I see things in our community and I see people being desperate, particularly in the political climate we're in at the moment, in the Middle East, in America, North America, we were in England, and you hear, not so much the politicians, not so much the more elite people, the people with the money who, are batting this ball back and forward all the time. But the people who need help, the people who can't afford their food, the people who can't put gas in their car, the people who don't have health care, and the people who are sick, and the people who just want someone to help. My heart always breaks for that. And I think, fucking hell, these are not people coming from a different planet. These are people down the street from us. How can we be first world countries and not be able to help these people? I just don't know how that works. And on the one hand, we had people going on strike because they weren't getting enough pay, so the healthcare system was really suffering. People couldn't get operations they needed because there wasn't the staff. And then people started striking because they're going, we're working too many hours because there's not enough of us and we can't keep doing this. And on the same way where they were discussing, same time they were discussing who should have the money and how much should they get and how do we employ more people, the corporate companies, the big conglomerates, were telling us how much money they made in profits. Yeah. And you're thinking, well, like 16 billion in profits. Couldn't you just make a billion in profits and put the other 15 billion to people who need it?
Surely. Yeah, I don't understand that. Yeah, how much money is it's corporate greed is the undoing. So
yeah.
How much money is enough? Like, yes,
I'm not saying it's not their money, and I'm not saying they didn't come up with products that people bought, and I mean that's capitalism is bad fundamentally. It's work. The world's working on capitalistic intent. But all I'm saying is if you broke even, if you invested something in a show or whatever you did, and you broke even. You didn't lose anything, so that you can walk away from that. If you make a couple of hundred books, you made a profit. Do you need to make 50 million books and then just keep all that and just keep increasing that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why, what, how much is not is too much when the person right next to you might not be able to heat their room or have aircon or hasn't eaten for 4 or 5 days. What's the big deal? Can't you just go, there's some bucks, get... You know, sort yourself out.
Yeah,
And
how
you
do you
think,
rest at night knowing that?
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
I get it.
You
I
go,
get
oh, Bill Gates or George Soros and all those people, you know, Elon Musk, and they're the richest people on the planet, and you know, they give so much to charity. Fucking hell, Elon Musk surely could buy fucking some country in the middle of shit and go to nowhere and build houses in a whole fucking city and feed everybody for the rest of their lives. Surely he could do that. You know, and if I had the money, why wouldn't I want to do that? It's like, it doesn't make any difference to me. I'm going to give you $57 billion because next week I'll have $57 billion I've just made more. You know, now I'm going to send rich people into space so they can have a look around. It's like, fuck, you know, I just think, wow, how do we do that? How do we try and solve cancer at the same time that we try and develop warfare that's going to give people cancer and kill them? Like,
Yeah.
what the fuck's wrong with us here?
It's
So
all
that's
about
it. I'd be
perspective.
Superman. I'd be
Yes.
Superman, and for a day, everybody'd have the best day of eating ice cream, regardless of where they live.
And you'd fix the world's problems. I love
I
that.
hope
That's good.
so. I would,
That's
just for a
good.
day.
All right. Well, we're going to switch gears. We are heavy metal horror. So I want to ask you, what are some of your favorite horror movies?
Well, a classic. You know, I was very fortunate to love The Exorcist, but I was very fortunate when they did an anniversary thing to meet Mr. Blatty, Mr. Friedkin, and of course, the girl herself, you know.
Yeah. She's a
I met
sweetheart.
them.
Linda Blair's awesome. Yeah.
And I got everything signed, had a great chat, and I actually spoke to Blatty because we were on the same agents in William Morris in Los Angeles, and I wanted to do The Exorcist as a stage show because it had never been
Oh.
done.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd researched everything, and I actually met the French guy's son who had done all the tricks for the bed and all very simple effects because I used to work in theater, so that I was interested in all that. So I figured out how I could do it and how it could work, and then some Chicago company did it, and I never got around to taking it any further. But so The Exorcist, classic. And I mean, you know, George C. Scott and just on the trilogy, and then the last one they had, a couple of friends of mine were in it, Eddie Osei, James Darcy, and so I've got an association with that film. Of course, Hellraiser, you know, another incredible movie. You know,
Yeah.
that scene,
Clive Barker, I
Hellraiser, is
love
like,
his short fiction.
yeah, I mean, just what a storyteller. And there's something so dark about it, so cool about that first one, you know. I mean, the classics, Halloween, Friday the 13th, you know, all those ones where, you know, kids going into a forest, you go, ah, don't do it. And then
Yep.
you can always tell who the first one's going to buy it. It's like a classic 1960s Star Trek, isn't it? If they ever
Yeah.
went down to the planet surface and they pulled the guy in the red shirt, he
Right?
was fucked. You knew
He
he was
says
going to
he's
get
totally
it.
fucked. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
You
used
go,
to go to
you're in the
my
red shirt. Don't go, mate.
That's
Don't
right.
go.
You stay away from that guy.
Yeah, you're the first one.
My grandma used to love watching horror movies, so I'd bring like the scariest stuff I could find, Evil Dead,
Brilliant.
everything I
Oh,
could find for
yeah.
her, and she loved it. One of her
Wow.
favorite ones, she loved Child's Play. You know,
Oh,
Chucky. But she
yeah.
goes, you know, that Chucky, he's got real pretty eyes, but he gets awful mean. I'm like, yeah, Grandma, he gets awful mean. But she loved the
Nasty
descent
kid,
where
nasty
the
kid.
spelunkers, the women who go into the cave. She's like, she was yelling to the girls, "Don't go in that cave!" And I told them, girls, not to go in that cave. You know, it was just like, just you know, those memories of watching horror with her was
Oh,
just
just
beautiful.
classic.
Yeah,
And
just
I tell you
beautiful.
what, I didn't kind of, because I was brought up on Hammer horror movies,
Oh
so every
yes,
Friday or
Christopher
Saturday
Lee,
night.
Peter Cushing, come on.
Yeah, man, there'd be one of those on, and I'd be sitting in my mom and dad's house, you know, or, well, my mom's house, sorry, stepfather's, with the lights out, just by myself with the TV, flicking,
Yeah.
watching this movie till
Yeah.
11:30 at night. I thought it was so cool.
Yeah, I
But
grew up
yeah,
on that.
I and the newer ones, I didn't really take the Chainsaw Massacre, of course, but when the newer ones, I was like, yeah, I didn't really kind of watch them so much. And then I found myself one afternoon several years ago, just thinking, oh, flick it on, I wonder. And I'd heard about Saw, and I watched Saw and fucking fell in love with that series.
Yeah.
They were just so cool. And then Hostel, that one blew my mind as well. And so I think I've seen both all the Hostels and all the Saws about like 50, 60 times each,
Nice.
because I just like, they're
Nice.
so good to go back to. So well done, and just great ideas. Yeah. So, and brutal. So, yeah, I like the
They are
brutalness.
brutal.
Oh.
Have you seen The Witch or The Ritual? Yeah, I love those kind of they remind me of something that you would have seen like in the 70s. It's a deliberate plot, you know, the pacing builds and it's so organic and so creepy, and that's what I love about those movies. There's something unnerving about what's going on here. And like Midsommar was like The Wicker Man, you know, it was very much like that,
The
you
Wicker
know.
Man. Yeah, exactly. You just know something's going on, but you don't sure what the fuck, but it just feels
It's
too
good.
weird, you know. The Omen, they
Oh
did it. The
yeah.
Omen. Yeah,
Damien, it's
brilliant.
all for you, Damien.
Oh, yeah. It's like,
Oh,
whoa.
okay. We are going to be switching over to I've got some one last sets of questions for you. They're one-offs. They could be about anything. So, okay. What would you tell your childhood self about being a professional musician?
It's the best thing in the world. You get to see, meet the people everywhere on the planet. You get to have the best food, and you get to see the most amazing things on our planet, and all while you're having fun playing music. So, yeah, it's a definite go for it.
Great. Which non-music celebrity would you most like to have a drink with?
Oh, non-music celebrity. Muhammad Ali in his heyday.
Nice. All right. What one song do you wish you'd written and recorded instead of the group who did?
Oh, fuck. Oh, Stairway to Heaven instead of Led Zeppelin.
All right.
Yeah.
Outside of music, what hobbies do you enjoy?
Training. I train all the time, and I'm an automation engineer. I work for Disney, and subsequently do The Lion King, and I worked
Oh,
as a
nice.
production manager for Queen and lots of stuff like that. But I guess, yeah, training is my thing. I'm into my training. I train every day. I do have days off, but I kind of do some cardio on those days. But yeah, I always trained when I was young in Canada, since about 12, and then, you know, I did some, you know, steroids and stuff when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and then backed off that. And now I'm 60, coming off of 61, so I just do it to stay as fit as I can.
Nice.
You know, so yeah, I think that's my big thing, is training, boxing, you know, weights, boxing, and talking about it with people. I love that, the nutritional aspect. And yeah, that's what interests me, helping people. You know, I see people in the gym, maybe they look, they're like, they're not quite sure what they're doing. They're doing something slightly different. I don't want to be that person to go, you don't do it like that, because maybe they've got a goal. But I will interact with them and see if, hey, if you need any help or anything, and there's questions, then please ask. You know, I've been doing it a long time. So, yeah.
Nice. Excellent. All right, we're going to play one of our first games with you today. This is a game called Blast Beats. I'm going to ask you a simple question. It's usually a either or question or short answer, and I want you to just give me the answer as soon as you can.
Oh,
That's why
shit.
Blast
Oh,
Beats.
shit. Yeah, I
Okay.
like it.
Favorite pizza topping?
Cheese.
Paperback or Kindle?
Paperback.
PC or Apple?
Oh, Apple.
Favorite streaming service?
None. Netflix.
Okay. Favorite cartoon character?
Mighty Mouse.
Nice. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh, strawberry.
Dog or cat?
Cat.
Justice League or the Avengers?
Yeah, Justice League.
Star Trek or Star Wars?
Oh, Star Trek.
Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster?
Bigfoot.
Dracula or Frankenstein?
Oh, Frankenstein.
How do you like your steak cooked?
Oh, rare.
Favorite sport?
Boxing.
Favorite movie snack?
Oh, popcorn.
Favorite subject in school?
Oh, history.
Your least favorite subject in school?
Oh, religion.
Favorite board game?
Strategy, is it
Stratego?
risk?
Risk. Okay,
Risk.
yes. Okay, just two more in this area, in this game. The best concert you've ever attended.
Oh my God, was that Motorhead?
Nice.
Overkill
Okay.
to up. Overkill to up.
And the last one, favorite line or scene from This Is Spinal Tap.
Oh, fucking hell. Oh my God. This one goes to 11.
Nice. Okay.
It's one louder.
Yeah. Well, there's a new movie coming out, so I'm very
I
excited about that.
know.
Yeah, it's gonna be
You know,
good.
just as a footnote, if you go to Stonehenge, in they have a visitor center, and in the visitor center they have a gigantic wall with all these quotes from Byron and historical quotes from people who visited Stonehenge, and right in the middle it's got the quote from Spinal
No,
Tap
we're not
about
gonna
yeah,
fucking play
and
Stonehenge.
it's like just brilliant,
Oh,
just
that's
brilliant.
great. I saw
Yeah.
Spinal Tap. They came to Cleveland on the Break Like the
No
Wind
way.
tour. Yes,
Oh my God.
Nigel
Tufnell,
Tufnell comes out and he's like, "Hello, Cleveland." I'm like, "Oh, yes, 'cause you have to say that." And it was one of the best concerts I'd ever
oh
seen.
yeah.
They were so good. They played almost 2 hours, and they did a
Wait.
what they say an urban version of Sex Farm, like a rap version of
Oh my
Sex Farm.
God.
It was fantastic.
Oh
Just such
shit.
an entertaining show.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's a great, that was a great album, Break Like the
Oh,
Wind. I love that. I love the
so
first one, but that
good.
was a great album, yeah.
So good. Okay, I'm going to this game is I forgot to pull up something here. Now I
Okay.
got it. Okay,
I love
here
that
we go.
one. That Blast Beats, that's a winner. I
Oh,
love that.
nice.
That
Good.
was great.
Well, this is called the Hot Seat.
Okay.
I'm going to name a band, and I want you to tell me your favorite album by that band. And we call it
Okay.
the Hot Seat because sometimes some people don't know the bands, don't like them, and they feel squeamish. I'm like, no, we're just finding out.
Okay.
Everyone's got their own favorites. So, okay.
True.
Okay, Black Sabbath.
Oh, Black Sabbath.
Okay, Judas Priest.
British Steel.
Queensryche.
Queens, which is the one with Queen of the Reich on?
I think that's
I think that's Queens, right?
isn't the EEP?
Oh, it's possible. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
the first one, yeah.
The first one.
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
that
Iced
wasn't an
Earth.
easy out. That was my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's great. Back in their heyday, man.
Yeah.
Iced Earth.
Iced Earth. Oh. Don't remember the name of the album, but it was the third it was the third album. Was Ripper Owens? Which one was Ripper
Oh,
Owens?
he came in, that I don't remember which albums he did, but I know he did the one with the war, like when the eagle
Yeah.
flies and that one.
That's it. That's it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
That was, I think that was, I mean, I'd heard of them before there, but because of Ripper, I'd listened to it, and
Yeah.
that album I really liked. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a local
I
guy
don't
too.
remember the title.
Yeah. Motorhead. I'm gonna guess Ace of Spades.
Fuck. No, I have to say that because it's 82, but it's got to be Motorhead
Oh,
because
okay.
the
Yeah.
first time I ever heard that, which I'd never really heard before, and when I heard the album, I think I listened to the first Motorhead, the track, probably about 18 times, so much that the guy who owned the record went, "For fuck's sake, will you stop picking the needle up?" And I was like, "I
Yeah,
can't help it. Listen to it."
it's great. Yes,
Yeah.
the very first Motorhead album I got it was a cassette I saw at a yard sale. There was no case. It was Orgasmatron, and
Oh,
it was
there you
just a
go.
quarter. I'm like, fuck, I've got to get this. I mean,
Yeah.
Road Crew,
Oh.
Orgasmatron. I mean, it's
Yeah.
get it. Okay,
Thunderous.
Carcass.
Oh, I can't remember what its name is. The latest one.
Surgical steel or the one,
It's
the newer one?
surgical, surgical, surgical.
Which
Fuck,
it's,
what
I
an.
mean, it sounds like they didn't skip a beat between that
Yes.
and Heartwork. It was
Totally,
like,
totally. I
what the
loved
fuck?
Heartwork, and Surgical was like,
Brilliant.
wow. And I saw them at Bloodstock because, of course, they're friends, Bill's a friend, and they blew my mind. I stood there for the whole show, and afterwards I was going, mate, I've got to give you a hug. That was fucking
Yeah.
just the best thing,
They are
yeah.
so good.
Oh.
Dio.
Dio.
Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, yeah, Dio. I was just checking. I
Yeah,
thought,
yeah.
Holy Diver.
Okay. Halloween.
Halloween. Not really my thing.
That's fine.
Not really my thing.
It's okay. Rush.
Oh, Rush. Ah, fucking hell. I mean, you've got to say 2112, haven't you? But Hemispheres. I love Hemispheres.
Great album. Yeah. Opeth.
Opeth. Opeth. What's the name of the second album?
So the Hearse,
Pet,
the Hearse album,
no,
Orchid.
Orchid, I think,
Okay. Is it
yeah.
Orchid? Is that
I'm my with the with the more current stuff. I don't take much notice of the
it?
names,
Yeah.
but
If you can,
yeah,
their
I
last
think
couple albums
yeah.
have been really good. Pale Communion, I think, is a
Oh
brilliant album
man,
as well. Love that.
again, I just saw them. They headlined, did a headline spot at the festival, and I watched the whole thing, and it was next level. It was so,
Yeah.
it was just gone. It was like, what a fucking band. So
And
yeah,
Akerfeld
I
is so
just,
great as a front man and with the audience. Like he
yeah, there was
stopped and he
the,
was talking and he was asking
yeah.
the audience like between like he's like, does anyone have any questions? You know?
Yeah.
And like people raising their hands and he like answered three questions. I'm like,
No, I know, yeah.
who
And
does this?
there was a bit where he was on stage and he was starting to talk and someone must have shouted out, "You shit," or something, and he went, "We're shit." Oh, that's really nice of you. Thank you so much. He just carried on. He just
Yes, I
carried on. I
know.
was like, oh, what a genius.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he's just great. He's just so good.
He's like your favorite uncle who's like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. He's just popped around to play this amazing show for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Opeth because their music is like a journey, you know.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
I like Harlequin Forest. It's like it just goes
And
all over the place.
I totally hadn't got them at all. I totally hadn't got them at all. I didn't really listen. I was thinking, oh, it's black metal and stuff. And I didn't realize it was prog. And yeah, so I kind of went back listening to stuff. And that's, I don't know the titles of the stuff, but I was just going through their catalog listening to stuff. And stuff was jumping out at me. But yeah, amazing,
Such a good
amazing.
album. Okay,
Yeah.
King Diamond.
Well, it's got to be Melissa, isn't it? So
Oh, yeah, Fade's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Iron Maiden.
Maiden, well, you know, I was a huge Diano fan, so it's got to be the classic Iron Maiden, you know, because the tracks on there, Phantom of the Opera, you know,
Yeah,
just everything,
those first
everything.
two albums are fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, Testament.
Testament, I would say for me, the Legacy, because I still got the demo of the Legacy before they were Testament, you know, and
Nice.
yeah, it was amazing. And we did, Chuck was, managing us when John Cazula was still around as well. So we had Chuck and John. And so that was just great to have him right there and be watching Testament shows and listening to the material. So yeah, I think, yeah, that for me is like classic Testament, you know.
Nice. Yeah, so we've got a few more here. Anthrax.
Again, not really my thing. Not really my thing. I mean, you know, I'm aware of Anthrax and you know, Neil was a good friend of mine and Dan Lilker. And so, you know, I kind of like the first album, Fistful of Metal. And then Joey, it kind of took a different, a bit like Iron Maiden, not bad. Of course, Indians, and they got loads of classic stuff. Among the Living was a great album, but it just didn't grab me the same way as the first stuff.
Right. Megadeth.
Megadeth, Killing, you know, I mean, Peace Sells is the hugest album that I absolutely love, but there's so much in Megadeth. There's so much great material, and sometimes it's not all the albums, but Killing was just like, yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
Nice. We just got a few more here. Slayer.
Everything. Got to be rain and blood, innit? I mean, haunting the chapel, of course, and Showing No Mercy, just I absolutely adore.
Rain and Blood's like a perfect album. It's one of the perfect
Rain and Blood
albums,
is
I think.
just perfect. It's 28
And it's
minutes
short.
long,
It's
and
like
it's
so fucking short, but it's like brutal.
oh yeah, it just yeah. And when I went to see them on the God Hates Us All tour, I was invited to go and see them, and they played the first half of God Hates Us All. And then in the middle played the whole of Rain and Blood, and then played the rest of God Hates Us All.
Oh,
And
wow.
I was watching Dave Lombardo going, "How is that even possible?
Yeah,
He
he's
never
amazing.
stopped. Amazing,
Yeah,
yeah, amazing.
it's like watching George Coleus for Nile.
Yeah,
It's just like
yeah,
fuck, how? And I'm just
yeah,
watching him, and he's just like sitting back, like doing nothing. Like Jesus Christ, Yeah,
yeah.
it's phenomenal.
Oh, totally.
Okay, two more in this group. Kiss.
If. Well, it has, Alive 2 is the album, isn't it? But Rock and Roll, I think Dress to Kill, just because I love the look of the album and stuff like that. I mean, Kiss Alive, because I'd seen it, is just a phenomenal album, with Beth and that whole live production. But yeah, Dress to Kill just looked, kind of special to me.
Nice. And the last one, you can do either Venom or Venom Inc.
Everything by Venom Inc., because they're a really good band. You should give them a
Yeah,
listen.
I'm
They're
gonna
really
try.
good.
I'm gonna give them a shot.
But I'd say Venom, for me, Welcome to Hell, because it was like the beginning of everything. And they were friends of mine, and they'd done the first single, and we were all living in the same area. Mantis's girlfriend lived across the road from me. Her brother came with the first single and went, "Oh, he's made a single." I was like, "Fuck, it's impossible. We don't make singles. How has he made a single?" And then in League With and Live Like an Angel, I saw them with Clive. They played a couple of little youth club shows, to about 30 people. And it was just chaos. This noise was chaos. But again, there was something different about it. They weren't formatted. It was just like something else is happening here. And I think from the moment you put on Welcome to Hell, Sons of Satan comes in like someone's just drove a truck straight through your kitchen. It's like, what the fuck's happening? And it's just glorious in its ugliness.
Yeah,
And I love
love
it.
it.
I love
That's
it.
good. That's great. All right, this last game, we've only got a few more things and I'm gonna let you go. This is Name That Festival.
Okay.
Venom Inc. is playing a festival with two other artists. I'm gonna spin the wheel of mystery to find these two other bands, then I'd like you to name the festival that you're all playing at. So
Oh,
I'm going
shit.
to this is gonna be fun. And there's everybody on this. So I'm gonna share my screen.
Okay.
And let's see, make sure you can see it. Can you see it?
I can see it.
All right, here we go. Okay, I'm gonna spin
Oh, fuck. I gotta put my
yes.
glasses on.
And I'll let you know when it comes up too. If
Oh, good.
okay, and this is everybody. There's got a whole stream. Oh, it looks like the first one,
Fuck.
Post Malone. Okay, so Post Malone,
Oh, shit.
and let's see who the other artist is. And we've got looks like it's ABBA. Okay, so we have ABBA,
I'm
Post
going.
Malone, and Venom are sharing a festival stage. What is the name of this festival?
Vakin.
Okay, there could be anybody at Bakken, right? Yeah, okay,
There's
that's
like a good, there's like every band that's ever existed that Vakin over one weekend. So yeah.
yeah, no,
Or a week.
that's awesome.
That's not real though. Is that real? Were we on with Post Malone and ABBA?
No,
I mean, that's
I'm
amazing.
just it's a hypothetical. It's like,
Oh,
okay,
let's just do it. We should
let's
just do
just
it.
do, we can, yeah.
I'm gonna contact them and say, listen,
Why
I've got a
not? I think
tour.
you should. I would go see that show.
Imagine,
I
imagine.
mean, the last thing we usually like to like is, we talk about we're always fans of other artists and what your favorite piece of memorabilia is, but you've already shown that. You've shown your pick with, the Lemmy pick. I'm gonna guess
And his
that's gotta
shirt.
be your favorite, and his shirt. So and the last thing is, like, you've got a tour of the States coming up in January, and then you're touring the rest of the world later on. What can fans be most excited about when they come to see you?
The thing is that what we do is for us, it's about the music. So, there's lots of characters and there's lots of debate on who should be doing what and whatever, but 40 years ago, someone sits in their mum's house with in their underpants, whapping on a guitar, and comes up with a track, takes it to their band that weekend, and they rehearse the song, and then it's in their set, and they play the local scene. But That's how it progresses, and those songs stay with the bands and become quite popular. Count Basie, a black metal, a Witching Hour, stuff like that. And but 40 years later, they're not their songs anymore, because the last time that they probably listened to those records was when they'd finished them. They don't sit every night and listen to. But somewhere in the world, Costa Rica, Panama, fucking Manila, you know, Kuala Lumpur, somebody has listened to that every day and felt empowered by that. Somebody in Canada has had cancer, and that music has helped them. Someone's been doing military service for the US in Afghanistan and played that music to get them through the day, to get them through their exercises. So, you know, it becomes much more about your music than the band's music. And Venom Inc. wants to give you everything that you want. So we want you to feel, if the first time you heard the band was 1982 or 1983 or 1993 or 1999 or 2014, I want you to feel exactly how you felt when you heard that song. I want you to be that person again, because inside us, we don't age. The outside ages, but the mind doesn't age.
Right.
And we always want to relive that time, which is why we don't want bands to change. I don't want him not to sing in the band, because then that changes everything. And that I like that. It reminds me of that time, which was really good for me. So I want to transcend that. So when you come to see Venom Inc., we're about performing the songs like it's the first time you ever fucking heard them. We put everything into it. We give our soul to it. And we make it as real as we can possibly make it. And if there's a song that you absolutely just love beyond anything and you want to hear, then you tell me, and if I can play it, which I can, I'll play it for you, and I will give you that experience. And that's the difference with Venom Inc. You know, we're about you, we're about the music, celebrating it together and having the best night of our lives that we can have. You know, it's not just about taking money and going home as rich people. We if we break even, I'm happy. I just want to get to you, meet you, share a night with you where we play and we listen to music that inspired us, and hopefully it inspires the next generation to want to do it. And it's a shared experience. So everywhere we play, that's what we do. 200 people, 20 people, 2 million people, makes no difference to us. You get the same show, everything we got.
That's great. I was excited before to come see you, but now I can't wait. So I'm really
good.
Excited.
Yeah, hello, baby.
I want to thank you again for being on the show, Tony. The last thing I would like to ask is if you could do a bumper for us. Tony Dolan of Venom Inc. and you are watching Heavy Metal Horror. Would you mind doing something like that for us?
Absolutely. Hey, everybody. This is the Demolition Man, Tony Dolan from Venom Inc. and you are watching Heavy Metal Horror.
So good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Tony, I want to thank you again for being so generous with your time, for spending so much time with us. Just thank you for being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
No, and I'm sorry I was a bit early. Usually I'm late.
No, it's good, man. It's all good. We had a blast. That's what's important.
It was, I got to say, that was the most fun I've had doing an interview in the last, I don't know, 20 years.
Oh,
that was absolutely brilliant. I love the games. I just love the whole thing.
Thank you.
I love the format. Thank you so much. That was great, great fun.
Well, thank you. Well, we're gonna do our outro, and I'm gonna invite you to bring up the horns again as we leave our audience. So you can find Heavy Metal Horror on unsaneradio.com. Listen to full episodes or download to your device. You can find us on Facebook, Heavy Metal Horror Podcast. On Instagram, look for Montag Lewis, one word. Our YouTube page, Heavy Metal Horror Podcast. If you're watching, that's where you're at. Don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button. And if you know someone who'd like our show, tell them about us. This has been Montag, Master of Illusion. And you've been watching and listening to, all right, Tony, here's the horns.
Yeah, baby.
Heavy Metal Horror.
This is Doug Helvering, and you have been listening to Heavy Metal Horror, the best podcast that you've never heard before.